These two authors that we have tonight are two of my most favorite people on the planet. I love them so, so dearly. Clay McLeod Chapman is one of the kindest, funniest, best people in the horror community. And if you've ever seen him do an event, you know this to be true. If you've ever met him in person, you know this to be true. He's just a delight. And also, his books will rip your heart out. You know, nobody writes grief horror like Clay writes grief horror. Sweet Jesus. His two recent books, which we do have, they're kind of hard to get, so you should get them while you're here. Stay on the Line and Kill Your Darling are incredible. They are short and not so sweet, and I love them very, very much. And again, they will hurt you, and you'll say, thanks, Clay, that was awesome. but while I'm up here, we also have pre-orders available for Wake Up and Open Your Eyes. If you have not yet pre-ordered this book, please do so tonight. We're gonna try to work out some sort of either pre-order swag or signed copies or an event, maybe. this book is a wild ride. It is, I have not perfected my elevator pitch yet, but think possession novel with vibes of a zombie apocalypse, but also it's a media plague, and it's just real dark and grimy and gruesome and horrifying, and it'll make you really look at yourself and the people around you. And I just keep saying that it is the horror novel that America deserves. So these will be up at the main register, so if you would like to pre-order it tonight, please do so. And then you will be very happy in January when it comes out. All right, now for Rachel. I fell in love with Rachel Harrison's writing back in 2020 with The Return. Those of you who were following Gibson's social media at the time might remember the time I went on Facebook Live and I read the first chapter of The Return because we were all in lockdown, and I was like, I just read this book and you all need to know about it. And so I read it on Facebook Live and it was delightful. I found it delightful. I don't know if other people did. But then I got to start having Rachel as a guest on our Gibson's Bookstore podcast, The Laydown. And this became an annual podcast date. And we became friends through this. And in fact, I am recording the podcast right now because I can't have a new Rachel book without a podcast episode about the new Rachel book, because she's my most visited guest on the podcast, and I love her so much. We finally met in person last year, and now she's here, and I'm so excited that she's here in person, and it's crazy. So anyway, her book that she is promoting tonight is so thirsty, and it's so good, and it's the sexy vampire novel you want and you need, and it's got friendships and chaos and cheating husbands and just revenge. It's so good. It's so good. So if you haven't bought this one yet, please do. Please get it. And that's all you need to hear from me. Please join me in welcoming Clay McLeod Chapman and Rachel Harrison.
Hello.
Rachel, how are you? Rachel Harrison, you made it to the...
How are we doing, guys?
Good.
How thirsty are we?
So thirsty.
Are we feeling really, really thirsty? I have a question. Before we get to Rachel, I have a question for you guys. Who has read So Thirsty? Nice. Ooh. Nice. Who has read a Rachel Harrison novel before? Nice. Who has not read a Rachel Harrison novel before? All right. Ooh. Tonight is the night. I wanna grill someone who feels kind of brave enough. Can you tell us your first Rachel Harrison reading experience? Yes.
The Return.
What was it like?
I read, 3 months after my mom died, and it was a lot, but yeah. Also I needed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had your hand up.
Yeah, because of this lovely human. He was completely obsessed with all of her books.
Yeah.
And it was The Return, and it
the
was
return.
Locked down, and it just brought so much of what I just needed.
Yeah.
During that time, not feeling connected with people, and it was just...
That's amazing. Anyone else? Anyone else have it? Yes.
So it was The Return.
The Return!
I was on a cross-country flight from LA to Boston. My wife and I had just sold our house in Atlanta and moved to Maine, not knowing a single person.
Maine? Wow.
You okay?
And so it was just really hard to get that, like, feeling separation from everyone I knew while reading that book. Well, on a 6-hour long red-eye flight.
Yeah. That's amazing. The Return wins. Oh, you've got one.
Something different.
Oh, okay. Right. Do it.
Cackle was mine.
Okay.
It was just like such a nice light. Like, it was heavy in places, but it's really light overall to me. It's much lighter than most of Rachel's other books, I think.
I mean, I think we can all say that we're like Rachel Harrison fans, and we need to come up.
Don't you?
He's trying to come up with a fan. The
Harrison Nets. Like,
no,
I'm a Harrison. Like a Harrison. Like a.
Don't you dare.
Cacklers. like there's got to be something. If we don't have it by the end of the night, we'll take suggestions. So please. Like, file your suggestions. I think we need to do it. I have been a fan since 2019, and it was The Return. And Rachel won't let me say that that's my favorite book.
Fine that it is.
I mean, as you can tell, The Return has a place on in the pantheon.
It does.
I'm gonna slowly start sitting down because we're entering. But I just feel like I want to.
I'm just gonna make it.
All right, go tell me. I just want to make sure that the people the cheap seats. We got the. No. I for those of us who haven't read So Thirsty yet, this might not make sense, but I do want to ask: can you describe your dream mall?
Okay, so the dream mall, I have a recurring dream where I'm in a mall, and it's the same mall, but it's different every time. You know how in dreams, you try to explain, like, oh, it's New York City, but it's not New York City, you know what I mean? So it's kind of a version of the mall that I grew up going to in Rockaway, New Jersey. Two stories, and then there's a fountain in the middle, a clear glass elevator. That's the dream mall. There's different stores every time.
But it's based on an actual mall.
It's the dream version of the mall that I grew up going to.
Yeah. My dream mall is Cloverleaf, the Cloverleaf Mall in Richmond, Virginia. And it was because they had a movie theater in the back. Like, it was not even a part of the mall, but it was like you could go to the mall, but then you could leave the mall and go to the Cineplex Odeon. It was like in the back, and that was like where all the cool movies were. Do you guys have dream malls? Do we have a dream mall? Anyone want to share their dream mall? What's your dream mall?
Dream Mall is actually very similar to the one that I grew up next to called The Falls in South Florida. And it was like a big open area mall, two floors, with like a water cascading through the middle. And I've actually had a dream at that mall. But to your point, the stores were different, and then the cascading was different. And I'm like, something's off here.
Yeah. Anyone else have a dream mall? Dream malls? Dream malls going once? Dream malls? Yes? Yes?
I seem to not be able to escape the food court in my
dream. I'd like to second that.
The two things I would always get growing up in the food court were like the Nathan's corn dog nuggets and then the chicken teriyaki. Those were my two go-to. Do you have like a go-to dream mall?
Well, in the dream mall, it didn't actually exist in the real mall that I picture when I was little. But there was this pastry place that I can't find when I go to my dream mall.
The pastries elude you.
It's a nightmare mall. Feel like we're getting the point to all of this is that a lot of your work has this aperture, this moment of kind of entry, and I feel like we can talk about dream malls because it's literally on page one of So Thirsty, so no spoilers. But I feel as if there's something every time I read one of your novels, I enter in and I find myself in it. I find my way. And I think it's safe to say that we all kind of have that moment with your books where it's like, this is where I exist within this story. And I don't know, like it's easy to be a Harrisonette because we you just make it so it's an effortless kind of like entry. And I don't know, like I'm singing your praises because I feel like I want someone to either echo that and say, yes, I've had that experience, or tell us what it is about Rachel's work that you find so compelling. Yes.
So my absolute favorite is Cackle. I just am obsessed with Cackle. And I think the reason is exactly what you just said, is the second, I mean, I read the first chapter and I was there. Like, I want nothing more than to visit that place. And it just was beautiful how you set it up. And I just felt like I was just following her around throughout the whole book and like seeing her interact with everybody. And it was just, I just totally felt like I was in that town with her, yeah, experiencing all that stuff. And it was just amazing.
Getting your morning coffee. Exactly. anyone else have a thought in why you are a cackler or a such sharp teeth? That's not going to work. No.
I feel like all of them are about empowerment, self-empowerment on some level or another. But yeah, she manages to achieve that without ever making me feel judged if I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not there yet either.
Is it like an idealized version of like what we want to be? Like, oh, I want to get to that place, or...
Yeah, but yeah, it's different for every character because all characters are different and their journeys are all different. So it's like finding what you need.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Is there a particular character that you identify most with then? Or like the journey of a particular character in a particular novel?
No.
It's just all of them.
All of them.
Yes.
I wanted to mention that I love the fact that they're dimensional and that they have their flaws and that they're seen.
Yeah. Totally. I mean, we're here for you. Like, this is your night. But it's amazing because, like, you have this alarming, why am I blanking on the word when you write a lot? You're prolific. You're alarmingly prolific.
Coming,
Rachel.
From Clay. Sure, he's, well, like, I've had...
Hey, it takes one to know one. Yeah. But we're on a cycle. There is, yeah, a book a year, and that is not easy. And, but, you know, to write a book with the kind of level of execution, they're amazing books, but that you connect with your readers every single time. And, you know, I think most of us mere mortals will be lucky to do that once or twice. This is your fifth novel? It's So Thirsty,
yeah,
like book five?
Yeah.
And Bad Dolls, does that count? Does that,
yeah,
like, that's okay. Yeah. All right, so five novels in, and this is, you're not stopping. Like, you're just starting. You're just starting.
Yeah.
Book six is coming.
Yep.
Yeah. So how do you do that?
Well, I think the best way to connect with anyone is to be vulnerable yourself, which I hate doing, but it doesn't feel like I'm being vulnerable when I'm alone writing. I panic later when I realize it's going to be out in the world. But I think that's how you connect with anyone, is to just be honest about, yeah, and to, like, put out something specific and vulnerable, because I think there's universal and the specific. So if I say, like, I have anxiety over this one particular thing, or if I say I have a dream wall, somebody else would say, I have a dream wall, and then you connect to them over that one thing, and it's a good entry point. And, you know, talking about character flaws, I try and write a character that's well-rounded, that's, mm-hmm, like, makes bad choices, like, bad decisions, because we all make bad decisions. Mm-hmm. And to just be honest about that, and to be honest about the things that are ugly and that we don't really want to admit. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, if I can do that every time, if I can be honest every time, if I can be vulnerable every time, then it doesn't matter, like, what happens. Like, at least one person is going to come to me and say,
I related to something in this.
Yeah.
And that's the whole reason why I do it. Yeah. Of like how I do it, I don't know, you just do it. The why I do it is that.
Yeah. Is it, I mean, it's interesting then to think of like you have this body of work that's out there now and that, you know, The Return has been out for a while, Cackle's been out for a while, Such Sharp Teeth, you know, like you are creating this kind of legacy by way of these novels, and you know, who's gonna find Bad Sheep tonight? And it's gonna be their Black Sheep, sorry.
Yeah.
That they have their moment encountering you for the first time today or tomorrow. And I guess then my question is, when someone comes up to you in the moment, like today, like let's just, you know, hypothetically, and they say, oh, I just read Cackle, and that Cackle's been out for a while. Like, do you find that like you have to kind of remember who you were when you were writing it, or is it that like it's so kind of immediately there for the reader that it...
I think I can connect to it on an emotional level. If somebody's like bringing up like, oh, I really like this one moment in this chapter, I'll be like, or like right. If somebody's like, what were you thinking when you wrote this? I'll be like, I have no idea. But like emotionally, I can still connect to that book because all of my protagonists have a lot of, they're not me, but they have pieces of me. And like, I'm very self-deprecating like Annie. I'm very insecure like Annie. I make jokes at my own expense to protect myself like mm-hmm. Annie does. I can like go into self-pity. I can be like, oh my god, he's not paying attention to me, he didn't watch my story, oh my god, like I like like Annie, like I put all of that into that character, so I can tap into that, and I can also tap into where she is at the end, where she's like, I don't need this. So because there's pieces of my heart and soul, which sounds dramatic, but like you kind of have to put it all on the page,
yeah,
in every book, like that I can connect with. The specifics and like from a craft perspective of like what was I thinking when I did, yeah. Probably, you know, it's a 50-50 chance I'm going to remember that.
Well, it's interesting because on page 34 of The Return,
yeah. I had a...
well, then let's talk about So Thirsty then.
Yes.
Can, you know, for the uninitiated who are inducted as of tonight, like,
yes.
Is there is there the elevator pitch? Can you kind of like tell us
yeah.
the story of So Thirsty?
So the quick pitch is it's Thelma and Louise, but with vampires.
Jesus.
And
sold.
The way I kind of thought of the book, I was looking in the mirror one day, like kind of nitpicking my appearance, and thinking a lot about aging. And I was like, oh, vampires don't see their reflection. That's interesting. And then I was like, they also don't age. And so that was like kind of my in to like, it'd be really interesting to explore aging through vampirism. And the book kind of expanded from there. And our protagonist is Sloane Parker. She's about to turn 36 and she's feeling kind of stagnant in her life and kind of dreading getting older, and her husband gifts her with a birthday weekend trip with Sloane's longtime best friend, Naomi, and they have a little cottage in the Finger Lakes, and Sloane is thinking, like, we're just gonna hang out and, like, have wine tastings and, like, go drink wine by the fire, and Naomi's like, no, we're gonna, like, go party, and Sloane's, like, thinks she's aged out of partying, and Naomi has not. And she gets them invited to this lake house party that goes awry. And yeah, there's vampires. It says it on the cover, so you can kind of guess where it's going next.
There are vampires in this book!
Yeah.
I think... What's that?
I grew up in Buffalo, so not too far from the Finger Lakes. And
oh, yeah.
Like, vampires will get you every time. Yeah.
Do you ever, are you driving through and you're like, they're totally vampires out here somewhere?
There's vineyards, there's beautiful lakes, and then there's vampires.
I live in Western New York, so yeah.
Okay.
Amazing. It does bring up a really good point. And if we're going to go like, okay, Cackle has witches, Such Sharp Teeth has werewolves, you know, So Thirsty, we're tackling the kind of the vampire. And
what I think your body of work has kind of shown is that you take the monster metaphor, the metaphor, you know, whatever the monster is, you take that metaphor and you fit it to your characters, your story, and push it in a direction that is very different, very fresh, very new, and very you. And I love that. And I don't know if it kind of creates an external pressure of like, ooh, what monster is Rachel gonna tackle next? But it has kind of set this like giddiness for me of like, ooh, it's gonna be vampires this time. So I go broad first, and then we'll kind of focus specifically on vampires. But like, when you tackle a book, when you approach a monster for the first time, is there? I guess I want to do the chicken and egg. Like, what comes first? Is it the monster? Is it the character? Is it the concept? Like, how do you get into these monsters?
It has to be in tandem.
Okay.
Because I've had like really cool, like high concept horror ideas, but then there's nothing like, there's no like meat to the story. There's no like what is it going to be about? I don't know. It's just a cool idea, and those kind of fall apart. So it needs to be both. Like it needs. I've discovered over the years that I have to like they have to like come together at the same time. Like that bathroom moment of like aging, angst, staring at the mirror, blah, and then ooh, vampires. So like it has to be at the same time. And it was the same for Black Sheep. It was the same for Such Sharp Teeth, where I wanted to think about like what it is to exist in a body and having no control over our bodies, and then werewolves. And so, and then for Cackle, thinking about like what's so bad about being the witch in the woods, and thinking about like, you know, our specifically women's value. And then for The Return, I wanted to explore friendship and how friendships change, and kind of a friendship breakup book through, like, somebody leaves and comes back different.
Yeah. I want to imagine there's this moment where you haven't told anybody that So Thirsty's coming. And I think there are your friends, there's your family, maybe there's your agent, your editor, but there's that... those first few kind of hurdles where you're like, guys, guess what? I'm gonna write a vampire novel, and like someone's did anyone be like,
nobody said. I think the first person I pitched was probably my agent. She's usually my first stop, and I think she was excited because I think it's easy to pitch the concept. It's harder to like find the execution. And vampires are kind of this, people are like, oh, vampires are having a moment. I do think there's a lot of vampire fiction that's popping up, but like I pitched this book like almost 2 years ago, so like at that point it was kind of like, oh. And I think there's this like, because I kind of did werewolves and witches, it was like vampires felt like a next step. So I wasn't intimidated by vampires, and I think vampires are an easy sell. They're harder to execute in a way that's original.
Mm-hmm. But you do. And I think that's because it's almost like, okay, we have these tropes, we have these monsters, we have these metaphors, and you know, more often than not, in kind of lesser hands, you see the monsters kind of taking the author, like they take the story away from the author.
Yeah.
But you wrestled this vampire, so it feels like these are your vampires. It's true. I'm serious. Like there is this vibe. I mean, like, does anyone disagree with me? Like we for the people who have read it, like there is something to be said about like how the vampires here are they are utilizing something that feels valuable to the characters themselves. Like, it's not like, oh, you know, a group of friends like stumble upon a nest of vampires. It's like, no, these, like, the like Naomi and Sloane, like, they, what they manifest once they...
Once they turn into vampires.
You know, it is there to push the story forward in a direction that I feel is... really exciting and really you. So I guess, you know, you spoke to specifically about like what kind of vampirism did for these characters. What did it do for you? Like what did writing about vampires do for you, the author, or you, the human being, Rachel Harrison?
I think this happened with Such Sharp Teeth as well, where I kind of set out with one thing in mind. Like, for this book, I was like, all right, I'm going to, like, tackle aging. And then kind of through the process, the metaphor kind of swept me away. And thinking about vampires are inherently selfish because what they need to survive, they have to take from other things. And thinking about what it means to be selfish, and I, you know, the way I was raised, my own personal experiences, the environment I was raised in, you know, as a girl in the 90s, I think in particular, deprivation was always at the top. Like, it was just implied that deprivation is good and indulgence is bad when it comes to eating, when it comes to, like, sexuality, when it comes to being loud. Like, you're supposed to be polite, you're supposed to be small, you're supposed to, like, not get too much attention, be good enough to look at that you're, like, pleasant to look at, but not so good to look at that you're getting male attention and it's distracting your classmates. And so I was, like, raised to feel like it was wrong to want things, it was better to withhold, and I think writing this book, I kind of was able to recognize that in a way that I never did before and confront that, and to think about my own desire not as something that I should be ashamed of, and to not think of selfishness as something that's inherently bad, because I think it's a trap where we think anything, if I give into this want, it's selfish and that is bad. If I give into this indulgence or this desire, that is bad. And why? And to kind of investigate that, because vampires can't deprive themselves of the thing that they want because they need the thing that they want. So that was the gift I think this book gave me, is to kind of reframe my want and to reframe selfishness as something that's not necessarily always a bad thing.
And was that a discovery you made in the writing?
Yeah.
Like, was that, yeah. That's amazing. That's kind of what you want, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's awesome when that happens. So then, just to ask, because I feel like I need to, I'm required contractually to ask you, you know, what are your vampire rules then? How do your we all know the rules about vampires, the sun's gonna go down, we're gonna come out, you know, like, you know, get that garlic away from me, you know, no crosses. Like, what, you know, somebody came to you with the rules and they said, Rachel, these are the vampire rules. Write it. And you were like,
Well, so I think it's always, like, this book isn't about vampires. There are vampires in it. But the book is about, like I was saying, aging and what it is to live and to really commit to your own desires. And so the vampires come second. So I kind of just bend the lore to whatever makes sense for the story and what serves the story. And it was the same. It's the same in all my books because, like, it doesn't really make sense for me to get bogged down in rules if that's not what the book is about.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more like these vampires, like, they don't like sunlight. It doesn't feel good, but, like, they're not going to be incinerated the second they step out into the sun.
Yeah.
That doesn't really make sense. And, like, they don't have, like, to explain the, like...
But even that, that's, like, a great moment to have, like, in the book. Like, there's, like, this moment where it's, like, can you go out in the sun? And I'm, like, I mean, yeah,
like,
but...
One, I, like, did it all. I put all of, basically, I did all of the, like, world building in, like, one paragraph. Like, because it's not, like, what... To, like, create this whole lore and to be, like, you know, well, your fangs come out when you're, like, thirsty, but then they retract. And, like, that would just bog down the momentum of the story where it doesn't really matter. Like, it's not, like, so I just put it all into one paragraph with, like, my favorite character in the book is a guy named Illy, and he just, like, kind of gives them the, like, lay down. He's like, you know, you don't need to ask permission to go in places, but it's polite. Like, so.
But think of that from the reader's perspective. Like, we're entering into the world by way of your story, your writing, and I'm bringing all of my preconceived notions of vampirism into this story, but you're saying no. It's cool. Like, don't worry about it. Don't sweat the sunlight. Yeah. But then that makes me as the reader be like, oh my god, I've been living a lie this whole time. Like this is my concept of what the monster is, but Rachel's telling me it's okay to kind of let that go and move on beyond it. Like, and
just don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it, but like that liberation, like that you're kind of freeing us from the trope in a way that's like, oh my god, anything's possible. Like, yeah. Like the world is now my oyster because I don't have to worry about crosses. You know? And I know it's so small, and I know you keep going back to that one paragraph where you do the expo, but like it is such a pivotal moment because it says the world you all live in, the world where these are the rules, like it's not true. Like it doesn't like that's what you've been told, but I'm telling you now that's not true. Yeah. That's not like, and so it's kind of like, oh, where do we go from here? And you take us, like you take us on this journey. So I don't know. I'm just highlighting that because I feel like it's there's value to it, and it's you know what is it? Who's the Twilight dude? Like
Edward Pond.
The dude be damned. Like, you know, like it's like I just
the dude be damned.
I do want to ask you about thirst.
Yeah.
Like I know there's the title, but like. There's these moments with Sloan where she has it's almost like a tickle in the throat, and there's something so kind of subliminal, like, you know, tip your bartender, guys, but there's something so palpable, like there's something like I do feel that moment, you know, when she starts to have it, and I don't know, I just love that. And with Naomi, it's so different because she's like, because we're not inside Naomi's head, it's from Sloane's point of view. But like every time Naomi says, Sloane, I'm thirsty. You know, like you feel that. So I know I'm harping on a word, forgive me, but like I feel like is there a way to kind of talk about thirst on the macro level in terms of like what it is in the book, like craving, desire.
Yeah, I think
stuff.
Yeah, I think it's two things. Like there's the like thirst metaphor of like being like, we could talk about like the sexiness of it, of like a thirst trap, or like, you know, being thirsty in that way, or being like thirsty for more of like want and desire. But there's also just like actual thirst. And, like, I get grumpy when I'm hungry, but, like, I turn into a monster when I'm thirsty. There's nothing worse than being really thirsty. It's painful. And I wanted to channel that into the book because I think it's such a, like, cool thing about, like, vampires, about, like, that's the one they don't eat. Like, they only drink, and they only drink one thing. So it's like if you're out somewhere and you're like, I'm thirsty, and there's water nowhere, that like panic kind of sets in, that like physical like survival instinct of like, I need water, there's no water here. And I just think that's really scary. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be like, vampires are the monster, but like what would scare the monster is always fascinating to me. And like being thirsty and having nothing to drink, or being thirsty in Sloane's case, she's thirsty, but she's so focused on deprivation that she's not willing to give herself what she needs. And the physical sensation of that and the pain of it, I just think is really interesting. And like, I haven't seen that a lot. Like, usually in vampire stories, they don't focus as much, at least the ones that I've consumed. I haven't consumed all the vampire media, because that's a lot, but just the pain of it and, like,
yeah,
and like how damaging deprivation is. So, yeah, yeah, I think the physical, like, of it is always fun for me to write. Just the discomfort and, like, how long can you live in that discomfort?
Yeah. All of that said, if someone was asking me, like, what's this book about, I feel like my interpretation, and it is mine, and I feel like other people would have a different one, but, like, the kind of resonance, the kind of emotional core for me in this book is friendship.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I've read this book twice, and I read an early version.
Bless him, he read the first draft of this book.
But it was...
There's a line about bed bugs, and that was his line, so...
So thank me for that.
Yeah.
Guys.
It's a great line.
But it was there. I mean, like, it's funny, because, like, you know, you pitched it to us as Thelma and Louise meets vampires, and I think that was always the kind of driving kind of, like,
yeah,
you know, you lock into it, like, I see it, like, that's there. But then when I read the book, what it is, like, what is, yes, it's Thelma and Louise and vampires, and yes, there's the road trip vibe to it, but, like, the friendship itself kind of, like, it deepened and resonates even more in what it is now. And I guess, I mean, there's no other question here other than, like, can you kind of articulate the kind of notion of friendship within the book, and how that, it seems like Naomi and Sloane and the kind of the test and the strain of their friendship is something that, like, I having read it once but rereading it again, like, I, like, there was a moment where I was like, I don't think they're gonna make it. Yeah. You know, like, I don't think they're gonna live through this one, you know, friendship.
Yeah, I think, like, when I think about, if I were to have the opportunity to live forever, and you said, like, who would you want to live forever with? I would, no offense to my romantic partners, but I would pick my friends. Like, if I had all the time in the world, who would I want to spend it with? And it would be my friends. And, like, I think a lot of vampire, there is, like, romance in the novel, and I think it's important to Sloane's character development and how she, it's important to all of our personal development in life to have these relationships, romantic relationships, I think we learn about ourselves, but, like, the longest and most profound relationships I've had in my life are my friendships.
Yeah.
And they're the most important and the most precious to me, and I think it's difficult, you know, I'm 35, and watching my friends kind of, some of us are settling into our lives, and, like, being like, all right, we're in our house, we're gonna have kids, and some of us are like, I've made terrible choices, and, like, I don't know if this is, like, I found myself in this position, and I don't know if this is gonna be my life for the rest of my life. And it's just been interesting to see, like, I think when we were in our 20s, we kind of had an idea of how we thought our lives would go, and then you get to your mid-30s, and you're like, aw, shit, like, it doesn't, like, all this went into place. Like, there's still, like, it's still messy. And so I think I wanted to explore a friendship in under those circumstances, and to test a friendship under those circumstances. Like, can we weather the storms together?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, wondering that for myself and my own relationships and my own friendships, and to just see two friends at a different stage of life, in this new stage of life that I'm in. And I just really love to center friendship in my work, because I don't think there's a lot of work that does that. And
yeah.
So it's important for me personally, and I also, like, want to fill that hole in the market, and to, like, have the books that I wish, that I want to read.
Yeah, yeah. No spoilers, but when I reached the ending the second time, like, it was just the happiest of happy endings for me. Like, I remember being like, goddamn right. Like, it was just like, it felt good in this way that felt honest, but it was just like, I don't know, like, as someone who likes to write not so happy endings, like, you know, like, having a happy ending that was just
can't
like,
kill your darling. It's, yeah.
I don't know. Like
every clay book.
When you read So Thirsty, I defy you to not like have happy dance moment. Like it just felt like yeah, and that was I don't know, for me that feels like such a rarity. I want to kind of cue you guys up for questions. So think, you know, I'm going to ask a couple more questions, but they're going to be rapid fire. So start thinking about what you want to ask Rachel, because it's your chance.
Sorry, but I'm just distracted because Dave Grohl is over there and like his memoir, and I'm really mad at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He cheated on his wife and had a baby with another woman.
Yep.
And I just see him over there.
I was like, Dave.
Sorry, yeah, thank you.
I was like, Dave Grohl is here?
Dave Grohl is over there. I'm mad at you now.
Hey, Dave, what's up, man? Thanks for coming, Dave.
Sorry.
Well, that said, do you think of writing as kind of a form of immortality? That, like, you have achieved, ooh, that, like, you, having put yourself out there on the bookshelves, that you are now a literary vampire who will live on forever?
Now and, I do.
Yeah. my rapid fires.
Okay.
Are you Sweetie? Are you Sloan or are you Naomi?
Both.
Both?
I'm on a, most of the time, I would say like 85% of the time I'm Sloan. 15% of the time I'm Naomi. And like, watch out.
Sexy vampires or not so sexy vampires?
Sexy vampires.
Sexy vampires?
Yeah.
Okay.
They live forever. What are they going to do?
They're going to brood. They're going to... can vampires get high off of their supply?
Yes.
Yeah? would you want to be a vampire?
Yeah. I would regret it, for sure. But if someone gave me, was like, do you want to be a vampire? I'd be like, yes, I want to live forever, not age. And I would romanticize it completely, and then the reality would come later, and then I would complain.
Are you a present shaker?
I am not, and I've been falsely accused. I'm not a present shaker.
You've been falsely accused of being a present shaker.
Shaker, and I'm not.
You'll pick it up, and you'll...
I don't pick it up. Yeah. I don't look at the labels. I wait until it's given to me.
And then you're like, oh, thank you. That's so lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you?
No, I'm not. I'm more of like a afterthought. Like, I'm like, nobody gives me presents first, so.
Don't let him, if you gave him a present, he...
I would not shake it.
You want to know when his birthday is? I'm
no.
not going to tell you because he'll get upset.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't get presents.
That's why I don't get presents. There's a line in the book on page 78 in So Thirsty. There's a line, cold good moments. Is it cold good moments or good cold moments?
Cold good.
Cold good. Cold good. When I read that, I was like, this is awesome. Can you talk to us about cold good moments? Come on.
Cold good
please.
Is painful. Cold good is like when you have a long-term relationship end, and where do all those joint memories go, all the inside jokes? Like, between, Sloan is talking about her relationship with her husband, and they saw a kid in the parking lot of a grocery store shove a popsicle up his nose and said it smelled cold good. And like, just, but like, and so they would describe scents to each other sometimes as cold good. And like, what do you do when a relation, long-term relationship ends, and you have like, what happens to all the cold good? Fucking sucks. Yeah, it's painful to think about, but I wanted to give a name to that feeling of like, if you have a long-term relationship and friendship, romantic relationship, where do all those mutual memory, like, where does all that go?
Yeah.
And it's like, you kind of have to carry on alone with all the memories, and just kind of, that's a bummer. That's really difficult.
Can anybody out there think of a cold, good moment that they've had in there?
We're not. It's a lot.
It's a lot. But it's, I feel like we now have a term.
What happens to all the cold good?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're, like, that is now kind of embossed into the zeitgeist.
I'm where you are. If it helps, I'm where you are.
That's amazing. That's we can call it cold good.
We're not going to call it anything.
Moving on.
Can you tell us three vampire films or novels or stories or pop cultural thingy-dings that you would recommend us imbibe?
Interview with a Vampire, the TV show.
Yes.
Amazing. Let the Right One In, the original movie. Wow. And Nestlings by Nat Cassidy.
Yes.
Nat's birthday today. Yeah. Happy birthday.
Oh my god. All right. Okay, so, yeah, let's do it.
Let's say happy birthday to
everybody. We need to do Q&A, but let's do everybody. Am I doing this right? No, okay. So, all right, everybody just say happy birthday, Nat, okay? On the count of three. One, two, three.
Happy birthday, Nat!
You'll love that. Thank you. Yeah. Does anybody know him, Nat? Yeah? Okay, so over there's a little shelf talker that says pre-order The Wolf at the Door.
When the wolf comes in.
When the wolf comes in. Did I?
When the wolf comes home.
Wolves. It's something about wolves, I think, by that Nate Cassidy.
Yes.
Yeah, don't tell him I said that. But, you should, if you haven't read Nat, you absolutely should. He is, there's this hip new generation of horror authors coming into the world, and Rachel Harrison's leading the charge, and not far behind is that Nat Cassidy.
We say that we're like the sophomores.
Yeah.
The world,
so. Eric LaRocca, yeah. Brian McCauley. They're all the sophomore class.
We're the sophomores.
I don't know why that's the voice that I'm using, but that's the.
He's like an 80-year-old. An 80-year-old deli worker.
I have been held back a few too many times. Okay. So, those were, okay, what was Let the Right One In, Interview with a Vampire, and Nestlings by that guy. here's the thing. I've been bugging you about you and your books forever, so I feel like I could keep talking. But I do, oh my god, you're destroying me. do you have any questions for Rachel?
Rachel, or yourself, do you have any goals you want to accomplish coming up as a writer?
Get to junior year. I think just to keep doing it. I think we're both just like, can we just pass our classes and get to the next? Like, we just like really just want to keep doing this forever.
We want to keep writing?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so can you guys keep buying?
We thank you so much for coming, because this is like, it's so amazing to see you all here tonight, and the fact that you like showed up, it's just like the best, and it's for us, it's like, yeah, that means that like we're not like.
We're the returners!
So, yeah, just to keep doing it. So, thank you for being part of what allows us to keep doing it.
I mean, I feel like there is something very special and fortunate. Like, you know, we were all fighting to like get books on the shelves and like tell these stories. So the blessing is to be able to come back. And the only way for that to happen is for the publishers to see like, oh, Rachel sells. Like, people want to read more Rachel.
People want to hang out. Thanks for hanging out.
So just keep buying those damn books so Rachel can keep writing them, right?
Like, that's the... Yeah. We have to do this together. Clay's, like, my emotional support, so if you want to support me, please support Clay, too.
I'm her emotional support animal. I'm your Igor. Because your next book, Rachel, is a Frankenstein book, right? Yeah?
You've already read the next one.
I wasn't going to give it away. I was teeing you up to be like,
Clay and
what's the next book about?
We read each other's drafts, so Yeah.
And we're still talking to each other.
Yeah.
anyone else? Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, earlier you talked about all of your stories coming from a place of honesty. Do you find that the honesty gets easier as you go, or is it harder as you're digging deeper with each novel?
I think it's still easy because I'm always in denial about other people reading it until it's too late. I always, like, I think I have this, like, panic moment, Michael, bitch to you about it, where I'm just like, oh, people are gonna read this. And then I feel, like, I feel kind of safe in the bubble when I'm drafting it. I feel like it feels fun and cathartic and good, and it always feels that way until, like, the arcs are done and it's like, this is on NetGalley and people can start reading it, and that's when I'm like, I've put too much in the book and it's too late. And so luckily, but like I do feel very lucky that I'm so good at being in denial because then it allows me to keep being honest. I don't really think about other people reading the book until it is far too late.
Anyone else? Yes.
Any film potential for your works?
Nothing that I can say, but hopefully. Yeah. You know, there's options brewing, but let's all put it out into the... Let's manifest.
What movie, what do you want to see?
All of them?
Yeah.
Me too.
If you had...
Evolve. Definitely.
Yeah. I wouldn't let them do anything terrible.
Is there one leading the charge, though? Would it be like, if you had to pick one?
I really like Black Sheep.
Amen. Yeah. There might be some hope for Black Sheep. That's what I'll say. There might be some hope for Black Sheep.
There you go. Yes.
Oh, hi. All your books. I read Bad Dolls and I love it. Do you have more plans for future short stories?
Yeah, I would love to. I like have this dream of, because Bad Dolls was only released physically in the UK. So thank you.
I'm so excited.
I would love to maybe write, like, have an additional 4 stories and then pitch it to my publisher and see, like, maybe we could do, like, or maybe 4 to 6 more and then do, like, a physical edition of a collection in the US.
Like a Bad Dolls 2.0?
Something like that. So Batter Dolls, yeah. So I would love to. And I have some stories in anthologies. This year I had a story in an anthology called Mother Knows Best by Lindy Ryan. The Darkest Night just came out.
Yeah, yesterday?
Clay's also in that anthology. And then a Fear of Clowns anthology, which came out 2 weeks ago. And Clay is in that one as well. So I've been doing some stories for anthologies, but eventually, like, those stories will come back to me, and then if they fit thematically. But definitely, I love to write short stories, and I think it's really nice to write. Do you find this, like, after you write a novel, to, like, write a short story, it's like,
they're like 3-chord punk rock ditties to me. It's just like, I am hungry.
I also have there's a horror goes punk anthology coming out next year, and I have a story in that. We got to, like, pick punk or emo songs and then write a story based on that. So I did This Could Be Love by Alkaline Trio. I wrote a story based on that song.
Yeah.
So keep an eye out for that. That's going to be cool. It's coming out next year. So I'm doing, like, stories here and there, but I would love to do, like, have my own physical collection out here in the U.S. Yeah.
Yes.
Speaking of movies, are there any actors you would envision the characters of So Thirsty?
So it's interesting because I usually try and keep, like, blank slates in my head when I write. The only character in this book that I had an actor in mind for was, I started, like, thinking of the book around the time that Stranger Things season 5 came out, and Jamie Campbell Bauer as Vecna, and he was also he played, like, an orderly in the, but he was so good at being very, so, he could be so sweet and, like, seems so gentle and lovely.
He was already a vampire, too.
Yes. And then he could just switch and become so terrifying. And I thought that was such a fascinating performance that he was able to just, like, have that range of, like, oh, you're so sweet. You're dreamy. Oh, you're going to kill me. And I just, like, thought that. So I was thinking of him when I wrote Henry. So that's the only one, which is kind of, like, embarrassing to admit because it's, like, but, yeah, he's the only person I had in mind just because of the range and, like, trying to conceive of that character and wanting him to feel sexy and also, like, kind of a dork because, like, he's been alive for so long. I don't know. I feel like it's kind of nerdy to be alive. Like, he's been alive since, like...
Grandpa.
Yeah, like 400 years. Like, you just sit around and read books. Like, he's kind of a nerd. Like, dreamy nerd, but... yeah, to have that kind of range. So that's who I thought of.
Yes.
Any post-writing traditions that you have when you complete?
I usually... we'll just, like, watch something dumb on TV. I'm good at unplugging and, like, just allowing myself to, like, sleep in and watch trash TV and things like that. No, nothing, like, cool, nothing, like, I take a retreat. No, I just, like, sit on the couch and, like, what's the worst thing I could put on Netflix right now?
What's the worst thing that you saw?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I talked about this last night, but, like, after I got back from my first leg of the tour, I had, like, 3 days, and I watched Popstar Academy, which was, like, them making, like, this, like, which the people who, like, the K-pop machine behind BTS... was like, we're gonna make a global pop group, and they like put these like 16 to 21 year old girls in boot camp for like a year to like make a mega pop group. And it's like,
did it work?
Good try.
And I was like it did. I really like the group, but don't look them up now if you want to watch the show because you don't know who ends up in the group or not, and it's like a lot of drama. But like something like that where I just like I need to just completely rid my brain of everything because it's so intense writing that like when I'm done I just need to like wipe it clean. So that's kind of a tradition, is like dumb TV.
All right, one more question. Yes. Two more questions. We can get you two. Okay.
So for both of you, do you have a favorite Edgar Allan Poe story, short story, novella?
Oh my God.
Do you have one off the top of your head?
The first thing that came to my mind was the cask of...
Yes, dude.
Yes,
I'm so excited that you said that.
There you go. I got a gold star.
And my answer is cliche. I think probably Telltale Heart, because that's the first one I remember coming across, and like it like messed me up. The eye, in the doorway, really messed me up. So yeah.
There you go.
Wow, no pressure. What are you both reading right now?
You go first.
I'm reading ARC for a book that probably won't come out until late.
Are you reading Michael Wiehunt?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
I want to start that one. So. Yeah.
The October Film Haunt by Michael Wiehunt. It's his debut novel, though he has two collections of short stories out that are well worth it. It is weird fiction, cosmic fiction, kind of like strange, not like monster, like vampires and werewolves and Frankensteins, but more like there's someone out that window looking at me for 5 hours, and it feels very weird. So I would wholeheartedly recommend it, but not late at night.
I need to start that book. I've been crazy busy, but I want to shout out the, like, my two favorite recent reads were When the Wolf Comes Home by Nat Cassidy and Wake Up and Open Your Eyes by Clint Chapman.
You had that in your pocket. You knew that that was the...
Yeah,
you're
we
like,
set it up.
What books would you recommend for...
but seriously, it's, like, I think it's the most epic thing that you've written so far. It has, like, a real epic feel to it, and I...
Yeah.
I really love it. It's just it's really exciting to watch, like, to be a fan of your friend and to also like to watch them grow with each book and do something cool. And it's just like, it's the best experience, and I feel grateful to have it. And I think like this book is, I think you pitched it perfectly. It's the book America deserves, and the horror story that America deserves. And it's really, really wonderful and scary as hell. So definitely.
I don't know.
You're gonna be like, how could this human?
All right.
I want a picture of all of us.
Well, wait. You're gonna. Okay, we're not over yet.
Oh gosh. Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So she doesn't know this. You don't know this. But I need to ask a big favor. For Rachel's sake, okay? I'm the one asking for this. It's not Rachel, so know that like this is not on her. This is on me. But I have a really big favor. I have purchased some things that I want to give to each of you. This is a big ass. If you can give us just 30 seconds of your time, if you write a book about vampires, you need vampires. I know that this is.
They're children's fangs.
Are they young balls? Oh my god. Well, just.
Do you have to do like a surprise?
Yeah, you gotta.
Do they fit? Almost?
So tiny. Oh my god.
Okay, I'm gonna do this fast as I can. I want the Rachel's never had a vampire attack her. What I'm hoping is that we could take this moment to, you know, you guys were asking. I'm coming over there. We're gonna do our own, until Hollywood calls, we're gonna do our own little so thirsty moment. And my idea is that we, Rachel and I, are doing this lovely book event, book conversation, and then all of a sudden, does everybody have one? Okay, what we do is, I'm gonna film this. And it'll be like, hey Rachel, we're doing this is great. And then we will be like, oh my god, look at the audience. And then I'm gonna turn it to you all, and then you all do your best vampire, whatever you wanna do. And I will come to you each individually, and then I'll come. And then once that happens, I'll come back to Rachel, and then we'll do scene.
Okay.
Is that good?
Yeah.
Are you okay with it?
Yeah, I'm pretending that none of this is happening.
None of this is happening. Are you guys good? Okay? Just 15 seconds. All right.
All right, everybody be cool.
All right. Thank you in advance. Rachel, this was a lovely, this was an amazing.
Thank you so much
this
for
book
being
conversation
here.
Was
yeah,
just
thank, you're amazing.
Thank you,
thank
Rachel.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh my god! What's happening to the audience? What happened? Ah! Let's give it up to Rachel Harrison, everybody.
Thank you so much. Thanks to Clay. Give it up for Clay.
Oh, and thanks to Gibson's. This
Thank
is amazing.
You.
Thank you, Ryan, for making this all
Cool. And we'll see you next year at the next book.
Yes.